This week's guest has been described as the Essex Lou Reed, as well as comparisons to Ian Dury and Elvis Costello. And while I get that, it doesn't do justice to the styles of music this episode's guest, Scott Levine, produces. Part spoken word poetry, part Scott Walker-esque ballad, all set to the lyrical backdrop of everything from custard and toasters to Hollywood actors and murder. He has described his music as Marmite, and while I personally think Marmite is the devil's congealed blood in a jar, I am fully on board with Scott and his cracking new album, Disneyland in Dagenham. We talked about writing and recording the album, his relationship with the Hold Steady's Craig Finn, busking in France while living in a tent, home studios, porridge and more. Coming soon are musicians James Vincent McMorrow and Peter Bibby, Radio 1 film critic Ali Plum and People Just Do Nothing star and writer Steve Stamp. Follow the podcast on X and Instagram at Real Feedback Pod or go to realfeedback.co.uk for the latest and past episode info. Disneyland in Dagenham is out on May the 10th and tickets for Scott's June tour are available now. This isn't an interview. This is a conversation. This is Real Feedback.
I had porridge breakfast. I have porridge every morning.
Oh, you're a porridge man as well, are you?
Yeah. Yeah, literally every morning I don't have anything else.
Is that a health thing or you? Because I mean, I find porridge the cardboard of breakfast, but I still have it every day, pretty much.
No, I just love it. I mean, I don't have like a particularly healthy one. Like it's stuffed full of honey.
Yeah, same here.
It's mainly just comfort or I don't know what it is. Yeah.
It might be a nostalgic thing. It takes you back to your childhood.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, I mean, I don't mind a bacon sandwich, but that's more like brunch. I think I just a sugar issue. Do you know what I mean? Like, just need to start the day with loads of sugar.
Well, I read the other day that you shouldn't have a coffee for 2 hours in the morning. You should drink water. I can't remember the chemicals in the quarter cell or something like that. If you have a coffee that it ruins the, you know, and then you have a lag by sort of 10. I'm like, no, if you have a lag at 10, just have another coffee. It's fine.
Yeah, I'll kill my children within those 2 hours that I fucking really need. Like, I'll have like 4 cups of tea in 2 hours in the morning. Like, no issue.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of builder level tea consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where are you? Are you... a silly question. Are you in Dagenham or do you live somewhere else now?
No, I haven't lived in Essex for a long time. I live in Dorset.
Oh, right. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Because this is probably the earliest, if someone who I'm speaking to is in the same country as me, 10 a.m. is a pretty early one. Because last week I had an Australian guy at 11, because obviously that's 6 in the evening. So are you more of a morning guy or is it just that the PR lot tell you when it is and you just go, okay, fine?
I just got like a job and my missus works and I've got 3 kids, so it was literally like Tuesday and Wednesday's the only day I don't have them, and I'm working tomorrow, so it has to be in the evening. I don't know, so all the options, I'm not used to getting this much press, like they really, like I'm like, oh,
so they want to talk to me.
Yeah, and our like lives are so like planned and scheduled. It's just like, yeah, had to be today. I've got another one later as well, which is good. Like, it's good.
Yeah, I've got 3 as well, so I know how it works. Yeah.
Who else you got?
I've got a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 5-month-old, which was the unplanned one. and the day job as well. So it's pretty hectic.
Yeah, ours are 8, 4, and 1. So, yeah.
Similar.
Yeah, pretty similar.
Well, I've been really excited to talk to you because listening to your music, when I used to write, the sort of music I used to write, the stuff you do, when I listen to it, it makes me think everything I ever wrote was a load of shit. because it's so brave. That's the first word that came to mind. So when I first heard the first track on the new album, and I didn't know your stuff before, and so I heard the first track and thought, okay, this is the style of music it is, and I really like it. And then the second track comes on, and I'm like, custard, I'm like, hang on a minute. Have I flipped albums? It's so, I always worried about what people think about what, you know, wanting them to like my songs immediately. I want them to hook onto a melody immediately. But your music is so, I don't really know what I'm saying. It's a compliment anyway, but do you think about when you're writing a song, do you think about your listener, or is it just, I'm going to write this how I write it, and then if you're on board, you're on board. If you're not, then you can go and listen to something else.
Nah, I think I have in the past, but not the last couple of years. I just write stuff that makes me happy, like that. It's more about making something that's interesting to me, not like just avoiding cliches. Trying to put lyrics in there that really don't belong in songs, you know, like just and trying to, yeah, just trying to challenge myself, really, to you know, especially Custard. That was, you know, it's just a song about my little girl wanting a dog. I had to make it, and me sitting around doing fuck all, trying to write a book.
What's the subtext here? What's he say? Like, it's just talking about drinking custard. Well, that was the line when you said, I like drinking custard. I was like, yeah, I'm on board with this 100%.
I appreciate it. But yeah, I think in the past, like, I remember the album before Milk City Sweethearts, that like, I don't intentionally write anything. Like, they just come out, and I just normally choose the best songs for the album. But Milk City Sweethearts had loads of songs that I thought were like, radio friendly, and we had quite bad PR, I think, and none of them really got, well, I got, you know, Six Music played a couple of them, whatever, and I was just like, oh, well, fuck writing them, I'm just gonna write exactly what I want. And so this album really has just been like, I just want it to feel like a little world, you know. There's not really many radio friendly ones on there, and I don't really care, like, it's because it ain't all about that, really. I mean, it would be nice, you know, because I think I've tried that. I've tried to write lovely ballads and all these like sort of songs with like catchy choruses, and no one gave a fuck. And so I'm like, I'll just do what I want.
And see
what happens. I think that's the best way to be anyway, isn't it, really? I think.
Well, I think because it's staying true to the artist behind the songwriting, and I think that, especially, like I say, the style of music that you do, I think it can't be anything other than completely honest and what you want to do, rather than playing it to someone's expectations.
Yeah.
And if that feeling informed what you've done on this album, then it's been successful, because I went back and listened to Broke and Milk City Sweethearts, and while there are obviously similarities in the styles of songwriting, so you've got songs where you kind of do sort of spoken, I mean, I might describe it how you don't want to describe, so do correct me, but sort of these sort of, it's reading poems to music, is almost spoken word stuff, and then really sort of melodic stuff that's all in there. But it just felt like with Disneyland in Dagenham, the new one, that you just sort of, it just gone to another level. So there's a song in there called The Horse and I, which the intro of that, it was like I was transported into some 70s, I still don't know how to describe it, but just the instruments that were chosen at the beginning and the sort of the arrangement of it, I was just like, what the fuck? Like, two songs ago, I was listening to Custard. Before that, you've got a song that you got Craig Finn from the Hold Steady. I mean, there's all these different ingredients in the mix that's got my attention every time, instead of it just being a complete mess, which could have happened with all the different styles. So one of the things I wanted to ask you was, The songs, where, how do you decide when a song is going to be sung, or when a song is going to be spoken, or when a song's going to be a mix of the two? So how do the spoken ones come about? Do you write poetry first and then put music to it, or how does it work?
It depends, actually. I guess some of them are sort of sung spoken, like Sadly I'm Not Steve McQueen, that just come out as a song. That was like sitting down with a guitar, and it was almost like quite bluesy, but it's only two chords. And that come out as a song. But Horse and I was like, I just like writing, like prose poems and stuff like that. And so that just come from like free writing, really. And the first, you know, the first line just made me laugh. And, you know, I was like, I'm onto this, really. And so that was always like a prose poem.
So do you just have a, does a line just come into your head and then you build off of that? Or yeah. Do you think of a subject matter first?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, sometimes like one line can dictate the theme of a whole song. But I do definitely write in sort of like metaphors, like, you know, because it's fantasy, like the horse and I is about a horse that could talk. And obviously that's not really possible, but it's not until I normally just write and don't think about it. And then looking back, it's like, oh, that's about me and my mate that we don't really see each other anymore. And we went traveling together and we sort of went our separate ways and we were like really good mates for years. And now we don't, you know, not for any reason, we didn't fall out. We just sort of drifted apart. And so it's sort of about that in a way. Like, so it's always tied to, you know, because it comes from the brain, but, you know, from the subconscious, I think, you know, it's always tied to something real and something emotional, even if it's about a fucking horse that you're selling hash with. So I don't know. I don't, you know, obviously, like, this is why I'm finding all these interviews weird, because I never analyze it. And it's quite nice to, it's nice to be asked questions about it, because I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, you just sit down and when you've got half hour and just be like, right, and a line will come to you. And yeah, but I think I tried to steer away from the story, the spoken word stuff a bit, but I enjoy writing like that. And I really enjoy creating an atmosphere with music, like creating, because it ain't got to be, there's no rules to music, is there? Like, and I think it's, you know, like Craig Finn sort of creates more sort of song structures around his spoken word stuff, and that's quite inspiring. And he's got a lot more singy stuff. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like there's not that much, not many people have done that sort of short story set to music, like, really. So I feel I'm just like trying to be original in a way, you know.
Well, it 100% is that. It is that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Craig Finn, so how does an Essex lad who lives in Dorset hook up with New York-based, I think he's based in New York.
Yeah, he is.
The Hold Steady front man, Craig Finn. How did that relationship come about?
He tweeted about my Milk City Sweethearts, basically. Yeah, it got, there's a blog called Dangerous Minds, you know, Dangerous Minds
no.
blog. So it's massive, like it's massive. It's got like millions of subscribers, and the guy that runs that made Broke and Milk City Sweethearts like his albums of the year. Like, and he was like,
"Fucking hell!"
Yeah, it was really, and he loves sort of really. It's an amazing website if you're into sort of alternative stuff. Like,
yeah.
Really, really good. Not just like current stuff, but it's just, he writes about all sorts of stuff. And anyway. Yeah, Craig Finn read that, and he tweeted about it whilst I was recording this album. And I was with a mate who's really good at like networking, and I'm not. And he was like, "Fucking tweet him back."
Yeah.
And,
What do I say?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I really love Craig. You know, I love the whole Steady, and I love his solo records. I'm like this, you know. But I did. And then we sort of had a chat, and yeah, my mate was like, "Get him to be on the album." So yeah, we done that remotely, and then he was coming to London like about 6 weeks later with a Hold Steady. This was like 2021, I think, or 2022. I can't remember. A couple of years ago, anyway. And then yeah, I've been on tour with him a couple of times, and we sort of become mates. So yeah, been to New York to support the whole Hold Steady, and I think yeah, it's the first person who I really admire that likes me. And it's like, everyone has imposter syndrome, didn't they? But it's like, I mean, I love his songs. Like, and it's like, well, this geezer sees me as like a peer, which is mad.
Yeah
it's really mad. And it's great. Like, it's inspiring. I don't really feel that ambitious most of the time, but he's actually made me a bit ambitious. I'm like, oh, I could actually get to a level where I ain't got to have a normal job, maybe. And, you know, he's selling, not, I don't think I'm ever going to be big because my music's fucking weird, but enough to make a living off. And rather than doing 100 capacity venues, like 200-300, and because my fan base is just growing and growing all the time. And so yeah, it's been I just feel lucky that he fell into the album. And
it's validation for you as well, isn't it? As a songwriter, like you say, he sees you as a peer, and it's someone that you admire and has had a lot of success with his music. If he's saying that, it validates what you're doing. But so Disneyland in Dagenham, I live in Enfield, which is not that far, so I'm quite near the A406, which leads around to the A38 in Dagenham. And I had no idea that they were planning on building a Disneyland in Dagenham in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a kid then anyway, but I mean, how far did that get? And why Dagenham? What's the story?
I can't really remember. I saw my stepdad at the weekend. I meant to ask him. I forgot to ask him. But yeah, I don't know how far it got. It was just, I guess, in the pipeline. And because my stepdad worked around there, it was like it would just become common knowledge. Just like they're going to build it over there. On right, like next to the Circus Tavern in Raynham, like where the strippers go, and yeah. It was horrible around there back then.
I just imagine all the Disney characters. Well, yeah, I'm fucking Mickey Mouse. What's it? You got some beef, exactly. Have you?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it was just like, it's all right. It's not, it's not terrible, but it was like, what the fuck? Because I just didn't really compute. So yeah, and I'd forgotten about it. But yeah, it is true.
Yeah. I mean, because first of all, I just thought, what a great title for an album because of the contrast in Disneyland and Dagenham. And then when I read the bio that the PR company sent me, oh, fuck, it's true. It actually was going to go ahead. So you, in that bio, it said that you had 7 years out of music because you used to be in a band called
Big Top Heartbreak.
Yeah,
well, that was really just me, actually. Yeah, that was when I first got back into music after that 7 years. Yeah, so
Big Top Heartbreak were after the 7 year break. Okay, so yeah. What, in your teens then, were you in bands and stuff like that, or was it always doing your own thing?
No, I was in bands. Yeah, well, the first time I ever played live was busking in the south of France. I spent like couple of years pissing about in France, like playing covers when I was like 19. I played summer in like Nice, living in a tent, and then went to the Alps for the winter playing like Beatles songs.
Well, I was gonna say, what was on the set for a cover? What's Scott Levine's cover?
Yeah,
song?
Well, it was like late 90s. I don't know, it was like, it was a lot of 60s stuff. I didn't look like Jim Morrison because he's handsome as fuck, but I had like long curly hair. I wore like velvet flares.
Oh my God.
And it was Britpop, you know what I mean? It was like, yeah. But I get, there was a bit of that about, but yeah, so I played a lot of Hendrix, a lot of Doors, like some Jam, and a lot of Beatles and Stones, and stuff, just, crowd pleasers, I suppose. The Eagles, like all just cut like, just stuff that people like I think like Crowded House, just songwriters really. But and I was in a band. I come back and then met a girl and moved to Canterbury and was in a band then called the John Doe Band, which was just singing other people's songs. There was the guy who's sort of still a mate. He just wrote these beautiful songs, like really, really amazing songs. It was sort of more like folky kind of stuff, and the songs I wrote were just shit, so I never put forward any of them
right
to the band. So yeah, and then I it weren't until I was like probably 27 28 that I started writing songs that I liked, just a late bloomer, I suppose, and that was more sort of punky. And so I was in a band called, I started about my own band called Brown Sauce, that was like 2005, and it was sort of like Chaz and Dave meets Queens of the Stone Age. That's how we sort of talked about ourselves.
What a pitch. Can my band play at your venue? What do you sound like? Right, okay, bear with me here. Chaz and Dave meets Queens of the Stone Age.
I mean, it was great. Like, I had a couple of different incarnations, but then the best one was, had this guy called Sammy on drummer. We were a nightmare together. Like, we were both lunatics at the time, but we had some great gigs. And he was like sort of fucking mad, like sort of Keith Moon drummer. And yeah, we were just a two piece, so it was great. But yeah, it all sort of fell apart. Well, I fell apart.
So what were those gigs like? Was it just there just happens to be people in the room watching this chaos on the stage, or were you did you care about the craft? Just from how you describe it, it just sounds like half an hour chaos with two guys holding instruments.
It was. But people liked, well, you know, we didn't do that many like great gigs. You know, we played to a lot of empty venues, like in King's Cross, and supporting other bands and stuff, and just really trying to, you know, get somewhere. But it was just so inconsistent. I didn't show up for gigs sometimes, and
oh god,
and had some really like Parlophone got interested in me, and I didn't show up for the gig they were going to come to. Like, yeah, I was just mad. Just in, I was really suffering like with my mental health, basically, and just weren't. You know, I also thought like you've got to be mad, like, you know, living that kind of like, you know, got to be like crazy, and you know, and it was just, you know, I weren't really living and at like true to myself.
Yeah,
you know, and yeah. So it all kind of fell apart. But we did a couple of great gigs near the end, actually. We played one at 93 Feet East that was like a magazine launch party, and it was packed out and everyone was going mental. I was like, oh, here we go. But yeah, I think that was probably one of our last gigs. But yeah, we're going to reform, me and Sammy. We're going to make a punk album next year in my garden.
Have you got a studio in your garden?
I have, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that actually, that was another question I had, is how with three kids, how do you have time to write? Because, and you say you got a day job as well, because I mean, my phone is absolutely packed with two line, you know, melody ideas or a little chord sequence or something that are never going to see the light of day recorded, just because I think, when am I going to do that? But you obviously, I guess so.
Yeah, that's when I do it at night.
Yeah.
I do the same as you, like record little ideas. I had one a couple of days ago that cracked me up, so that's in there. Like, I just, you know, some of them I know are going to become a song, and I'm quite happy for them to sit there. Yeah, as I say, I get like one or two days a week, and so I very rarely write songs, actually. But at the moment, I've got like two albums written, so my brain's sort of like quiet. You know, I'm not hunting for ideas too much, but I do write quick. So I could sit at a piano and come up with something, and I might write a first verse, you know, within 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm like, right, that's done. That just needs like a half hour, an hour sitting down, and that'll be done. So yeah, so I don't know. I think at the moment we've just got too much on, so I'm just quite happy just to. I think it's a process of like thinking about the songs and. You know, maybe coming out of the odd one here and there, but I always have enough time. Like my, I get time to write at my job as well. Sometimes.
What's the day job then?
It's a night job. So I do sleep. I do sleeping nights at a rehab. It's like a detox house. So yeah, people go for their first week of rehab.
The garden studio in my garden. I've got a concrete like plinth base ready for the. Because my day job, I'm a video editor, so
okay.
I currently have to do it in the kitchen, and then when the kids have their dinner, they're sat next to me while I'm trying to like edit a video. But the garden thing, that was went to be my video editing / studio space. I know that whenever we sell this house in years to come, it's still just going to be a concrete base outside that doesn't have anything on it. So I've just got nowhere to do it, which is the annoying thing. But even at night, because I can't be too loud. Because you've got the baby, you know, but it is what it is.
Just finding time to do it. I mean, I built that myself. Like, it's still standing. It's not bad. Yeah, well, you might be able to see it.
Oh, yeah.
What's that? It's that stripy one there.
I'm so jealous of any type of man cave.
Well, we got quotes for it, and it was just couldn't afford it. And then I spoke to a chippy, and he was just like, no, you can do that, because I've built a couple of stud walls. He was like, it's just four stud walls.
Right.
And I was like, oh, yeah. But yeah. I've done the base myself. And my stepbrother come down. He'd been a roofer, so he helped me do the roof.
I can't even keep a shelf on the wall for more than a month. That's how bad my DIY skills are. So
you'll be surprised. I'm a fuckwit as well. Like,
I am a DIY fuckwit.
But necessity, like, it was my missus. Like, you've got to build out. I don't want all your shit in the house. Like, you've got to get all your shit out of the house. It's like, all right.
Yeah, because the thing is that when you're writing, you have to, you can't just, well, you say you can write quite quickly, but you still, you can't just go, I've got 10, 15 minutes, let's go, nothing's going to happen, or you might get an idea, but then you want to sit down and evolve it and you know, flesh it out. So you need a good couple of hours each time to have a proper session and maybe put something down.
Yeah.
But what's the quickest way you write? Is it on a piano then? Because even though I can play a few minor and major chords on a piano and that's it, really slowly, but I will come up with a melody much quicker sitting at a piano than I will holding a guitar. So what's your go-to?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not the greatest piano player, which I think is why I don't really know what I'm doing. I've become an all right piano player, actually, but I tend to just improvise, just fucking see what happens, try different stuff. But I tend to, like, come up with ballads if I sit at the piano, and I sort of try and avoid that a bit. So I tend to write with a guitar on my lap. I like writing. My go-to, like, writing situation is on the sofa with a film on that I've seen 17 times, so I ain't got to pay too much attention.
Yeah.
And then I'll have a guitar and I'll have my little writing book or whatever, and that's what I'll do. And that's sort of, yeah, because my missus works nights as well, so it's normally just me, you know, on the sofa after the kids are in bed, and like a couple of hours of that come out of a banger.
So that's almost like you feel that you can't write a song when you're sat in quiet and your purpose is to sit and write a song. You almost have to be, while I'm doing something else, the song will just come.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got the TV on in the background, you need to just feel like stuff, that life is just carrying on, and then I might find a tune rather than sit down and have a dedicated songwriting session.
With less pressure, isn't it, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't put much pressure on myself anyway. Like, I know from experience, like, you can't always, it ain't always going to be working. So even if I come up with a few lines whilst I'm watching a film, like, I just try not to put too much, you know, there's no one demanding that I write these songs. You know, it's not
the head of EMI on the phone going, where's the next number one?
Yeah. We need this big hit now. So just enjoy it. But actually, when I write on my, I sort of write songs on my laptop. I write songs in a book, and I write like prose poems on a laptop, which is sort of, I don't know why, like more like prose stuff. I write it on a computer. So like The Horse and I and things like that end up being just sit at a laptop, maybe with some music on.
Do you find that, because for me, I'll have a week or two where I'll just constantly hear songs in my head that it's like I'm thinking about a song that's I've heard on the radio. It will be that clear. And then I'll have 3 months of absolutely nothing. So do you get kind of waves of creativity and then dips that are where you just, I'm not even going to bother trying because I've got this, just no, there's no juice in the batteries at the moment, so to speak.
Yeah, well, it's never off, but there's definitely waves of intensity. Like when I had, I think it was about 6 months ago, and I had like no songs, normally got some in the bank, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
Like, I was like, shit, got none in the bank. So I just went on this mad, I wrote 2 albums worth in a month, basically just went fucking mental, and good ones as well. Like I probably wrote 40 songs in a month or maybe 6 weeks. Yeah. Which was just crazy. And I was like, wow, I'm a machine. And obviously and I was telling a friend of mine who's a writer, I was like, and I must be getting better at this because there's normally like about a third of them are all right and the rest are shit. And I was like, but everyone's great. Like every single one of them is great. But I was wrong. I was completely wrong. Like some of them were shit. It just took me a while to work it out because they're all great when you write them, aren't they?
There's been so many that I thought this must be another riff that I've subconsciously copied because this is really, you know, this is really, and then I'll listen back to it 3 weeks later and just go, I'll delete that because it's just so bland and nothing. I mean, so one of the lines that made this, so there's a song on the album called Debbie, which is one of my favourite songs on the album. And it's just the humour in it is, so the line, I think about how many loaves of bread it would take to build a staircase to the moon. I mean, do you make yourself laugh when you come up with these lines? Or do you purposely go, right, what's the thinking behind the lyrics, is what I'm saying? Because you've got a song like that, and like you say about custard, you said yourself it's about your daughter wanting a dog. But then you've got a song called Little Bird, which is this like beautiful, I don't know what instruments you use at the start, but it's like these real old-timey movie brass sounds. And then the line, a little bird watching from the rooftops, comes in and quite a lot. So what dictates whether you're feeling a bit silly and wanted to make, do you want to make yourself laugh or do you want to make other people laugh? And then what dictates whether it's going to be a more heartfelt song that you're writing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, especially when it's piano stuff, like Debbie was definitely just trying to make myself laugh, I think, you know, and I'm so proud of that, really. Like, it's somehow quite touching as well as being like really funny and like I said, metaphor. That's sort of about me and a mate as well. That song is not about a woman, a guy I used to share a house with who was like, I don't know. I mean, it depends what mood I'm in, you know. If I'm in sort of an eccentric mood, and then I guess I'll just, it's about like making new language, I think, or trying to make new language. Like, I've never heard anyone say, you know, how many loaves of bread would it take to build a staircase to the moon? I can't claim ownership over that because maybe someone has said that, fucking probably, like everything's been, but you know, but yeah, Little Bird was like, because I, you know, like most people, I like a lot of different music, and I was just listening to Scott Walker that day and was just like, sit down at the piano, I'll try and write a Scott Walker song, you know, something that's not like a weird story. Cause I love singing stuff like that. And it's hard. It's actually harder to make a song like Little Bird for me than it is to make Debbie. Like, I could churn those sort of weird stories out all day long. Like, get a sort of Serge Gainsbourg bass line and a drum beat. And
what, that's, I say, Debbie's got the bass line at the beginning of Debbie. I love it. That's the one that immediately just went, well, what's this?
It's big in Belgium. And I had an interview with a Belgian guy the other day, and I was just like, it's like in some magazine over there. He's like, yeah, it's number one in our like alternative songs of the year. I was like, I'm surprised you understand the words. And he's like, oh, we don't. I was like, what do you mean you don't? I was like, we just love the music. I was like, oh, that's really good. It's like, you've no idea what I'm talking about, but it's still like, you're still listening to it over there. That's kind of amazing. Yeah. It is good musically.
But then you've got keeping it local, which, I mean, you say about metaphors, obviously it's not directly about this, but you're talking about murdering parents and drinking blood and stuff like that. This is your closing track.
Yeah. Why not, I suppose.
Well, that could just be the argument, is why not? Because, I mean, there's all these comparisons in your bio. They talk about Elvis Costello, they talk about Ian Dury and stuff. And I can hear all those things, and you've just said yourself a couple. But at the same time, it's not those. And I think that I've done it before where people listening to the podcast need to have some sort of idea, having not heard the new album yet, of, well, okay, describe it to me then, describe what this guy sounds like. And it does to an extent, but I think it is very much its own thing still. And I think you pick any artist and you could say, well, they sound a bit like that or a bit like that. But they're still their own thing. So how important is it to you to not be labelled or compared to someone else? Or is it, you know, is it a compliment? Or do you think, I just want to be my own thing?
No, I take it as a compliment. I mean, it depends who it is. I haven't been compared to anyone I don't like. And some of them have been like wild, you know, like someone called me the Essex Lou Reed, which is just like ridiculous because it's not, I mean, he's such a like god to me, that bloke. I love comparisons. Someone compared me to a guy before I even mentioned Scott Walker. Someone said, "Oh, Little Bird's like Scott Walker, but with Meat Raffle," which is, you know, Meat Raffle. Yes. They're like a Hackney band.
Yeah,
And I was like, that's cool. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, that, like, what song was you just talking about? The one at the end, isn't it?
Keeping
What's
It
it
Local,
called?
yeah.
Keep It Local. I mean, I just love Tom Waits, really. I think I'm just trying to be Tom Waits. And, I think I love the Beatles, which is, I think, why I'm unafraid to make sort of an eclectic album, because their albums were all over the gaff, like, especially the last few, like Abbey Road especially, is fucking mental. Like, that last half is all just like 1 minute songs, and
Yeah.
it's just all over the gaff. But the darkness and the humor of Tom Waits is like really appealing, and the literary kind of like nature of it, sort of, because I love books and love writers, and I'm more, I guess I'm my lyrics are probably more inspired by writers than they are by musicians, or they're inspired by the musicians that are also inspired by writers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I give up on, I do sometimes try and write like proper songs, but it's not my forte, like songs with no meaning, like anthemic ones where, like people don't really know what the fuck they're saying, but they're going to say it anyway, because it's like, but I do get people singing like, I chose amphetamines over you at every gig. I close that every gig and
Oh,
go,
do
normally
you?
get everyone singing that. And because I played Debbie a few times on tour with Craig Finney in February, and I got them all singing Take the Bread Out of That, It's Not a Toaster. Just try and get people singing weird shit.
With the live shows, because normally if a band has a certain sound, a rock band, for example, they normally sort of, okay, well, they tailor the set to sort of be dynamic. Let's have a quiet one here to give the crowd a break, and then we're going to da da da. But because of the style of your songs, and you've got a lot of these spoken word songs, how do you tailor your set? What are you thinking you're going to be delivering to the crowd? Do you, because some of your stuff people will dance to, some of the stuff is just to be heard, I would say, and sort of just listened to and digested. So when it comes to writing a set list, what how do you do it? What's the style of or the order of the songs?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's like start at the top, like start with ones that are going to grab people's attention. I normally do a few sort of upbeat ones. I normally start with funny ones, really. I mean, yeah, I'm always afraid I'm going to become like more of a club singer, like a stand-up. More than songs, but yeah, I normally start with like can't remember what I start with. Well, I did a gig in someone's house the other day for my crowdfunder thing. Started with Steve McQueen, but yeah, then I sort of come down to some sort of ballads, and I don't know. I guess I don't really know. Like I normally finish with just me on the piano doing the Ballad of Lindsay. I think that if you've come to see me, like especially these days, people come and see me to hear the stories. And it's normally just me and a drum machine, so they're not coming to see a band; they're coming to hear me talk shit and play the songs. And being with Craig actually has made me realize I don't really need a band, because like the gigs were just as good with just playing it on a one guitar, like no drum machine. And I guess Billy Bragg got away with it
Yeah, he's done all right.
for a long time. And because at times I thought, oh, maybe I should, have a band. It's mainly financial. Like I've only just started to make money when I go on tour, and it's like I don't want to give that to a drummer. Like I'm keeping that. But yeah, I mean, I've used a couple of guys for bigger gigs, like when I supported the Hold Steady, because that was like over 1,000 people, and I just would have felt ridiculous, just me and a drum
Yeah, just
machine.
walking up with a little laptop and setting up. Evening, everyone. Yeah. Have you got any live shows coming up around the UK?
I've got a tour in June. I'm playing Rough Trade on the day the album comes out on May 10th, Rough Trade West.
Okay.
That's like just unplugged, I think, because they don't have the PA. And then I'm going on tour 1st of June
Is
for
there a
two
London date in
weeks.
there?
Yeah, playing the Lexington. The 11th, I think. Yeah, and there'll be some guests there actually. I'm going up. Yeah, just going to get some friends up doing some wacky shit for that. Is it the 11th? Yeah, the 11th, Tuesday the 11th for the Lexington.
Of June.
Yes, of June. Yeah.
Right, I'm putting that in the diary. I'm coming to that.
Yeah, come along and shake your hand. Yeah.
Well, because also before when you said, I feel like Scott Walker meets Meat Raffle is the new Chaz and Dave meets Queens of the Stone Age. So you should stick that on your poster
Yeah,
as
right.
the quota. So the album's out on 10th of May.
Yeah.
Is it weird because you said just last thing, you said earlier that it was a couple of years ago that you were recording this or parts of this. So firstly, why so long for it to come out? And secondly, now it is coming out after so long. Is it a weird, does it feel strange that it's going to be in everyone's ears?
I mean, it's always nice to let it go and it out into the public. Well, it's never actually, it's not nice. It's the shittest bit because it's never received as well as you want it to be. I mean,
Right.
so far anyway, it's normally like a little whimper. Like, oh, it's the fucking point of doing this. But to answer the question, why has it been so long? We just had issues like financial issues with like getting someone to mix it, and. Because I recorded it to tape and I tried to mix it myself and I'm shit at it, and yeah, there was just sort of issues with that, so yeah, but I'm not gonna let that happen again, like, because I'm, like I said, I write quick and I'm prolific, which is why I did a crowdfunder and put a studio in the garden. So yeah, I want another one to be out next year, and then one to be out 6 months after that, hopefully. Just to, yeah, I want to make like a sort of a Basild and Neil Young album, you know, like, that's how I'm describing it in my head, like a 70s Neil Young album, like,
Yeah.
you know, acoustic and da da da, but my songs.
I love the Essex Lou Reed, Bazzard and Neil Young. I just love the contrast. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm a massive Neil Young fan, so yeah,
Yeah, me too.
I'll be all over that when that comes out. So, well, best of luck with the album, Scott, because
Thanks, Kevin.
it is another level up from your last two, which when I heard them, I really enjoyed as well. But it just feels like it's unleashed this, I don't know, next level songwriting strength, the evolution of your sound. So I hope it does really well, because
Oh, thank you.
and I look forward to June the 11th. I'll throw myself to the front of the stage and shove my hand up, shake your hand if I can get
Yeah, do it. Yeah, it'd be good to
there.
meet you. Yeah,
Yeah.
thank you. Thank you. I listened to your podcast the other day. Like,
Oh, did you?
it's yeah, I love the sort of like eclectic guests. It's not just musicians, is it? It's all sorts of people. Like, yeah, it's
Yeah.
great.
Sometimes it works well, and sometimes it works against me, I feel, because people don't have people like consistency in a podcast, I think. And they'll hear one with you, and then they'll hear a guy who works on Terminator 2. They go, "What?"
Yeah, but that's good though. Like, yeah, just
I
well,
think so. I think
you
so.
just yeah. Well, it's just easy to listen. I don't listen to that many podcasts normally because I don't know why. But yeah, when I tag onto one, I'm like, oh, I could actually listen. Like, sometimes it don't matter who the guest is. Do you know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
just like,
What one did you listen to?
was it Edgar Wright?
Oh, Edgar.
Do
Oh,
you have
yeah, that was
Edgar
a live
Wright?
one. Yeah, that was a live one I did. Anyway, right, Scott. Yeah, good luck
Yeah, thank you.
with the writing, with the recording of the next two albums as well. And but this one is now Disneyland in Dagenham out the 10th of May, and an imminent tour as well. So,
Yeah.
good luck to you, Scott. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin. Good man. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, buddy. Bye bye. Bye.
See you, mate.